This morning, we'll read three verses from Canto 3, Chapter 22, Texts 12, 13, and 14. Is that right? 12, 13, and 14, yes. This section will end where Swayambhuva Manu is speaking. First, Kardava Muni spoke when Swayambhuva Manu and his wife Shatarupa came to his hermitage in the deep forest. Reception, speaking, requesting the purpose of his visit. Now here is Swayambhuva Manu speaking, appreciating the nice instruction that he has received, the sanctification of his consciousness through that instruction, an appreciation of the position of a qualified brahmana within society. And now he's getting down to business. It's what we heard in the previous class was his indicating specifically his concern. He characterizes it as his disturbed state of mind, troubled state of mind, due to his affection for his daughter. And he then identified qualifications, specifically of his daughter, but in general of a marriage match. Three considerations, and he added on another one. Age, character, and quality. So in the section that we're going to read this morning, a little bit more about character is identified. What's the difference between quality and character? Not like graphic contrast, but some further illumination on what good character means. And the additional item that he mentions is that a wife is to take charge of the husband's household duties. I like that language because sometimes it's, at least within my experience, that it's thought of differently, that the wife takes care of household duties, and it's like that's her domain. And then the husband does some other things besides household duties. But the language here is very specific, repeated also in the purport, that it's the husband's household duties that the wife, the language here is, takes charge of. So is she's delegated or given that responsibility to take care of the husband's household duties. At least some portion of them, because household duties are—it's the whole picture of what grihastha ashram is, and the husband is in charge of the affairs of the household, and the wife takes charge of a certain aspect of that, and we see that that's exactly what happens in the upcoming verses, where. So that her husband, Kardama Muni, can simply focus upon perfecting his life spiritually, although one could say he's already done that, in the sense that Lord Vishnu has already come before him. I mean, what further perfection does one require? But in any case, she's looking after those affairs, the worldly affairs, so that his attention can exclusively go upon, in his brahminical duty, upon the personality of Godhead, focusing in that way. In Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's a very nice pastime, lila, where the wife of Shivas Thakur, or Shivas Pandit, he was a brahmana, and she was a brahmani, and her part of her service was when he was getting ready to do his puja, she would take care of preparing the puja paraphernalia. He would do the puja, she would take care of the puja paraphernalia, and together in this way they would discharge their household duty in relation to worship of his deity. So while she was preparing the arti paraphernalia, the puja paraphernalia, she placed on a windowsill, open window, an achman cup with a spoon and water as she was getting other items ready. And a crow flew, and with his beak he grabbed the achman cup and then flew off into a tree. I don't think he was planning to do puja either. He just stole the achman cup. So Srivas Thakur's wife was in great distress, because her duty is to assist her husband in this way, and she began crying. What to do, what to do? Just then Lord Nityananda came and asked her, "My dear mother, why are you crying?" And she pointed to the crow and explained. And Nityananda ordered the crow, "Bring that achman cup back." And he flew back, placed the achman cup, doesn't say he paid obeisances, and flew away again. And Shivas Pandit's wife burst into another kind of tears, tears of ecstasy, saying, "There is nothing amazing in this for you, because you're the most merciful personality who simply wants to bring all souls into the service of Krishna. So now even the crow is assisting in bringing the achman cup for the worship of the deity. You are the most merciful." And she just, in ecstatic tears, fell at his feet. Although her mood in Chaitanya Bhagavat, it's really explicit and graphic. She was like mother to Lord Nityananda, who was like an avadut, like a crazy boy. I mean, not crazy, but a socially, you know how some boys will behave, an oblivious child. And he would sometimes sit in her lap and treat her like mother, and she would treat him like son, and it was an amazing relationship. So a devotee likes to assist another devotee who's serving in their household duties, and that's very nice. So she will assist you. Specific language again is take charge of your household duties. And in the purport, it is the duty of the wife to take charge of household affairs and not compete with her husband. A wife is meant to help, but she cannot help her husband unless he is completely equal to her in age, character, and quality. So it's not like everything goes on the female, the male, the husband needs to be very qualified. in the absence of qualified husbands, qualified males, so much disturbance in society. You know, in extreme degrees, without going into it too much, the atrocious behavior of men dealing with women, it's in the media like anything here in India, raping and just awful, horrible acts. It's so one can, I mean, anyway, so many. For having a peaceful society, men must be qualified, not only that, women must be qualified. Both must be qualified. So, the three verses we're going to discuss this morning are pointed messages where Kardama Muni has not gone and requested the hand of Swayambhuva Manu's daughter. It's the other way around. Swayambhuva Manu has come to Kardama Muni offering the hand of his daughter in marriage. And Prabhupada is indicating the former is very disrespectful and demeaning to the young man. The young man doesn't do that. Again, things to be nice and proper requires people who are nice and proper. Both Swayambhuva Manu and Kardama are nice and proper, and so this is like the ideal. And he's explaining a principle that when something comes without requesting it to come, one shouldn't say no. At least that's the argument that he's giving. I can certainly think of some exceptions. But here's what he says. This is text 12. To deny an offering that has come of itself and not is not commendable. To deny an offering that has come of itself is not commendable. Even for one absolutely free from all attachment, much less when addicted to sensual pleasure. Now, two verses later, he's adding something that's really important. He happens to know already that you have not taken a vow of perpetual celibacy. So if you don't take that into consideration, this verse, text 12, says, well, one may be a renunciate, but if someone comes to that renunciate and makes a sense object available to that renunciate, he should not refuse. There's a qualifier. And the qualifier is, he hasn't taken a vow of celibacy or sannyas or brahmachari. And we'll go somewhere in the middle. Specifically, Swayambhuva Manu knows that Kardama Muni has an aspiration to marry. How does he know? Two sources: Brahma, his father, and Narada, his brother. Narada Muni informed him. But Brahma has also asked Kardama to do this service, which requires a wife. So he knows he wishes a qualified wife. So it's in that context that this message applies. Let's say it the converse. Without the context, don't take this message as, well, I didn't ask for it, but here comes some sense object. Here comes some sense gratification. I guess it's the Lord's plan, so I'll have to say yes, because it says it in Canto 3, Chapter 22. In the first canto, second chapter, there's that nice verse, Dharmasya hi apavargasya nartotayopakalpate nartasya dharmakantasya kamo labhaya hi smritaha. Two things. One should not perform occupational duty with the purpose of gaining something, but rather it should be for the purpose of freedom or ultimate liberation. Second part. And even if something does come of its own accord, as it's being said here, of its own accord, to deny an offering that has come of itself. I didn't ask for this object of sense gratification. It just came. Here came some wealth. Here comes some followers. Here comes something. Here comes some recognition and honor and title. And I didn't ask for it. Here it comes. So let me enjoy it. Must be Krishna's plan. So the verse says, no. One should not, those things which come of their own accord, utilize them in sense gratification for self-interest, but only in the service of the Supreme Lord. So that's where this one fits, because Kardama Muni, obviously, he's seen the personality of Godhead. The personality of Godhead is going to become his son. Very mysterious on one level. Point is that after Kapila Dev becomes of age, he again goes back to the forest. He has the personality of Godhead as a son, and he's leaving to go back to the forest. What? For achieving what? Because the personality of Godhead is his son, and he knows it. He goes back to the forest. He's setting an example of detachment. In any case, this verse is saying, even if one is absolutely free from all attachment. So, let's just say that is Kardama Muni's position. He's not materially attached. He has a spiritual attachment. One can say, obviously he has a spiritual attachment. Lord Vishnu has come because of his pure heart. His purity of bhakti has attracted the personality of Godhead. So one can say he has no attachment. Let's go a little bit further away from that position and say, one can say, because family life means attachment, but let's even go a little bit further and say, Lord Brahma, at the end of, we were discussing this yesterday, Lord Brahma, at the end of all of his Govinda prayers, looks inside himself and says, I still have a material attachment. I want to create a universe. One could argue, legitimately, that that attachment, that desire, was placed there by the Supreme Lord, so that he could do some service for the Supreme Lord. He could be the instrument of the Supreme Lord Because it's such an important service that if there isn't a qualified person like Lord Brahma, the Lord does it himself. It's such an important service. You got to do it right. And to do things right on that scale, there has to be transparent, no mistakes, no ego, no... It's a transparent service of the will of the Supreme Lord. But Lord Brahma says about himself, and the Lord doesn't say, no, 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 you have no attachment. I have an attachment. But an attachment that can serve to be liberating, that kind. Because it's simply for the service of the Lord. Again, one could argue, Lord Brahma, had he not some desire that's in relation to this world, he'd be in the spiritual world. One could make that argument. Certainly there can be exceptions, but as a rule, someone that's involved in the material energy has some attraction for the material energy. At least for us, there's some attraction for the material energy. That is easy. No argument on that one. Now, how are we to move to the position to Nishkam Bhakti? How do you go from Sakam Bhakti to Nishkam Bhakti? Important question. That subject matter, going go back into the previous chapter, Lord Vishnu explains it graphically to Kardama Muni, how to go from his position of having a desire, a material desire, I want a wife, I want a qualified wife, I want to produce good children with a qualified wife, material desire, how that can go to Nishkam Bhakti. So it's, we like things black or white, and this is in this gray area where you can look at it this way and you can look at it that way. You can say he's a pure devotee. You can say he's a mixed devotee. You can make arguments on either side. It's that. But for sure, Lord Vishnu has explained, and now we're hearing again, in a way, different way from Swami Vamanu, how whether you're in this position or that position, whether there is one is absolutely free from all attachment, or one is addicted to sensual pleasure, if there's just for service, Brahma created the universe, Kardama Muni produced good offspring with a qualified wife, this extreme, that extreme, or somewhere in the middle, if something comes of its own accord, it should be accepted. He's putting forward that argument. Prabhupada's purport. In material life, everyone is desirous of sense gratification. Therefore, a person who gets an object of sense gratification without endeavor should not refuse to accept it. But now let's remember dharmasya. What is the second line? Kamo labhaya hi smritaha. When things that come of their own accord, one may accept them, but not in the mood of sense gratification, but only in the mood of this is something that can be utilized in Krishna's service. Only. If one doesn't have that protection, the message I just expressed and third time repeated this morning, one doesn't have that protection, one is subject to the illusory energy. If there's a separate interest from the interest of the Lord, one is in Maya. And say it the other way. One who has no separate interest from the Lord, one is protected from Maya. That is, so then, in this case, object can be accepted. but in the proper mood, not for sense gratification, but for service to the Lord. I'll give two expanding that message. Prabhupada expressed this way, that an impersonalist, when someone offers wealth, automatically their hand goes behind their back. No, no, no. And the Vaishnav, when someone offers wealth, their hand is extended. That is, this can be utilized in Krishna's service. Here's another explanation. In Shikshastakam 3 of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he provides the means of overcoming offenses. Because in Shikshastakam 2 and 1, the glories of the holy name are clearly identified, which we also know. But Durdaivam Idrisha Mahajani Nanaraga, there's no anurag, there's no attraction. That's why the mind is wandering, because we're attracted to other objects or other things or other opportunities for happiness and pleasure. And thus we're distracted. Even when chanting this most glorious holy name. So how to get beyond that distraction? The first item that's presented is humility. And what's the application of that principle of humility? Minimally, I'm very tiny and Krishna is very great. But so to think one is very tiny, one has to abandon false ego, because false ego says, I'm great. I mean, it starts with something simple like, I'm this body. But I'm not this body, so I'm in illusion. And then things that are of this body are great. And then comes, through false ego, comes pride. Hey, I've got this kind of body, a beautiful one, or a Brahmin one, or an intelligent one, a subtle body, or something that we have some pride in through the springing out of false ego. So humility is without false ego, not sarva upadhi vinir muktam, without any identification with the coverings, but just identification with the soul. So our acharyas, I like this explanation. Some of our acharyas describe this humility is like an eyelid, in that the eyelid protects the eye. If some object is coming, even involuntarily, the eyelid will close. Similarly, one who is humble is protected, like the eyelid protects the eye. Humility protects the devotee from entering into that awful territory of maya, thinking in a prideful way, or in an enjoying way, or in a lustful way, or a greedy way. One is protected from that by humility. Very nice. So here comes, back to the verse, here comes some object. One hasn't explicitly, in the case of Kardama Muni, he had a desire. He was in the forest to qualify himself, purify himself, to achieve the favor of the Supreme Lord, so that he would be qualified to enter into household life, and B, to qualify to have a qualified wife. So he had a desire, but he didn't go ask anybody for it, but it came. So now how is that object to be perceived? Krishna has brought this object, I should say yes. Not for sense gratification, but for Krishna's service. Kardamuni was not meant for sense gratification, yet he aspired to marry and prayed to the Lord for a suitable wife. This was known to Swayambhu Vamanu. How did he know? Narada Muni told him. He indirectly convinced Kardama Muni, quote, "You desire a suitable wife like my daughter. A. B. She is now present before you. C. You should not reject the fulfillment of your prayer. You should accept my daughter. A, B, C." Text 13. Now, reverse logic. One who rejects an offering that comes of its own accord, but later begs a boon from a miser, thus loses his widespread reputation, and his pride is humbled by the neglectful behavior of others. Now, Prabhupada modifies it nicely, because what is a qualified, anybody, certainly a qualified brahmana, interested in, you know, the views of the worldly people? They can't, they are not ruled by how the worldly people are going to appreciate the brahmana's quality and his purposes and his motivations and his behaviors. Yet he's using the argument as Krishna used such an argument with Arjuna. People will criticize you, this non-Aryan behavior. And the reputation of the Pandava, or the Kaurava dynasty, will be sullied. So, Prabhupada's purport. The general procedure of Vedic marriage is that a father offers his daughter to a suitable boy. I mean, certainly that's what happens literally at the wedding ceremony. And this is before the wedding ceremony. It's happening in a preliminary stage. That is a very respectable marriage. Conversely, a boy should not go to the girl's father and ask for the hand of his daughter in marriage. That is considered to be humbling one's respectable position. Cultural point. Swayambhu Vamanu wanted to convince Kardamuni, since he knew that the sage wanted to marry a suitable girl. Very important, it's there three times now. So he knew that was his interest. So now he's saying, quote, Prabhupada's paraphrasing in the purport, quote, "I am offering just such a suitable wife. Do not reject the offer, or else, because you are in need of a wife, you'll have to ask for such a wife from someone else who may not behave with you so well. In that case, your position will be humbled." I think it's clear. Paragraph. Another feature of this incident is that Swayambhu Vamanu was the emperor, but he went to offer his qualified daughter to a poor brahmana. Kardama Muni had no worldly possessions. He was a hermit living in the forest. But he was advanced in culture. Therefore, in offering one's daughter to a person, the culture and quality are counted as prominent, not wealth or any other material consideration. But we should take this purport and require everybody to read it. Because it's very, very different in the West, but at least my observation is very prominent in India, is the calculation from the parents' side of their daughter. How much wealth does the boy's family have? Yes? Too much. Too much. And just consideration isn't even given unless he's got some wealth or his family's got some wealth, and then they, you know, marry into wealth, and that's good. Character, you know, I don't know the boy's character. I know how much money they have. Anyway, that's degradation of Kali Yuga, where sense gratification rules, but Vedic culture, that's not the consideration. The character. So what's the character? He's fully placed himself at the lotus feet of the personality. Godhead, obviously from his speech before, his character includes his own humility, his own respect, his knowledge of the scripture, his ability to guide and advise, even the emperor of the universe. He doesn't have material possessions, but he has great character. So she's going to leave, consider, it comes up again later, but she's going to leave palace life and live in the forest. Hardship. She's used to, you know, lavish this and that, food and ornaments and bedding and yada, 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 everything, the whole thing of royal life. And she's going to leave that, and her father knows it, and she knows it too. Leave that and just live as the wife of a hermit. No problem. No problem for the father. Fortunately, also, no problem for the daughter. It's actually her aspiration to have such a person of character as her husband. That's all. That's her quality and her character. And last, text 14, Swayambhuva Manu continued, "Oh, wise man, I heard that you are preparing to marry. Please accept her hand, which is being offered to you by me, since you have not taken a vow of perpetual celibacy." And guess what Prabhupada speaks about in the purport? He speaks of two kinds of celibacy. One in the renounced order, one in family life, where procreation is there only for begetting children, and otherwise celibacy, his grihastha brahmachari message. Brahmacharya is student life, the beginning of life in the spiritual orders, and the principle of brahmacharya is celibacy. Only a householder can indulge in sense gratification or sex life, not a brahmachari. Swayambhuva Manu requested Kardava Muni to accept his daughter, since Kardava had not taken the vow of naishtika brahmacharya. He was willing to marry, and the suitable daughter of a high royal family was presented. So the terminology here in the purport is naishtika brahmachari, which means one who has taken a vow of celibacy for his whole life, whereas the other, upakur vana brahmachari, is a brahmachari who takes the vow of celibacy up to a certain age. So that's, he's identifying, the word is in the verse. Upakur vana. Not taking a vow of perpetual celibacy. So celibacy up to the point of marriage, and then within marriage only for producing good offspring. So that ends Swayambhuva Manu's message, and then next comes Kardama Muni's reply. I mean, he has a big advantage. He knew this was going to happen even before it happened. And he knew what was going to happen after that, what was going to happen after that, what was going to happen after that. So he's... We don't have that privilege. But he's a very privileged person, and we'll hear how nicely he responds. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yeah. Unlike
Bhagavad Gita, where a similar argument is given by Krishna, but then Krishna is taking a superior position of an instructor. But here, throughout the Swayambhuva Manu is presenting himself as somebody who is receiving instruction, a subordinate position. And this verse 13 seems a little discordant.
Not really. I mean, in the case of, just go through the logic of this. In the case of Krishna speaking to Arjuna, yes, Arjuna has submitted, Krishna is taking the role of the instructor. Now, over here, there's another scenario where Kardama has instructed Swayambhuva Manu, and he's appreciated the good instruction, but it's not exactly like Krishna and Arjuna, it's Kshatriya has a duty to engage all parts of society, including the Brahmanas, in their respective duties. So he's reminding him of his duty, which is not the same as Arjuna. Shishit teham sharimam tvam prapanam. So, it's a mix. He's looking up to Kardama as a brahmana and qualified sadhu. At the same time, he's Manu. Lawgiver of mankind. He's performing that role. And he's the father-in-law, or future father-in-law. So he has some privilege. He's acting accordingly. Anything else? Okay. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada ki jai.